T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Hour number two, Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase, now joined on the Wester Hotline by Mr. Sal Capaccio. Hi, Sal.
What's up, man?
Still recovering from Sunday? We haven't talked about you were on the sidelines. You would have been in the sun, too.
I was. Yeah, I guess kind of recovering, if you will. I am. I tell you this, I got like sunburnt. I feel that on your head, you know, my bald head. You know, so I feel that a little bit. It was bad. It was brutal. You know, I mean, it was bad for everybody out there, but I can't imagine for the players of 10 times worse, obviously, and 100 times worse, whatever. But I will tell you that, you know, for anybody who thinks that, like, oh, you know, it's hot and you've gone through hot games before and things like that. That was my eighth time on the sidelines, I guess. 1 year we didn't travel. On the sidelines in that stadium, not all games were in September. There have been plenty of them. There's been early season games plenty of times. That's the worst I've ever experienced it. And I will tell you, even on the sidelines, we were all checking on each other. Like photographers, staff members, workers, you know, the security, just like, hey, you doing good? You doing good? You need any water? Anybody? Like, that's the way it was, Joe, because everybody was dealing with it. And then you look over and you just realized, you know, how tough it was on the players to have to fight through all that through the whole game.
Sal, after a season last year on the sidelines here in Buffalo where it was tough, and then this game, the Heat game in Miami, do you think that the Baltimore game, if it is a rainstorm, would you rather have that than what you had in Miami?
Like, personally? Are you talking about just, like, personally what I would
sure,
rather go through?
Sure, like, you think,
I'd rather have the Heat than stand in the
you
rain
could deal
for
with the
hours.
Heat. But you think the team would probably rather have the rain?
They might, because, yeah, I think you're talking about their body and their performance.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just talking about what you've got to be out in the elements for.
Yeah, because I think the difference, Jeremy, is, sure, you don't want to play in the rain, and it could impact your play because you could make mistakes, but it's not going to impact your body and cramping and IVs and fluids and throwing up, right? I mean, that's their body is, you know, their moneymaker. That's what they do. You know, it's how they make their living. So I would say that as much as the rain would suck, the wind would suck, at least it's better than going through what they went through as professional athletes and their bodies deteriorating on them, which is what their number one thing is to take care of, to keep making on. For me, I'd rather go through the heat because I could at least go in the tunnel and find shade. Now, I could do that in the rain, of course, but you know, for the majority of the game, I have to be out there and it's coming down. It just gets wet and your clothes get soaked and things like that, so I don't have to deal with all the things they are. By the way, just speaking of weather, just want to say, like, woke up this morning, I'm watching all this stuff going down with Ian down there. Lots of friends and family right where this thing is going. It's now going to be almost a Category 5. It's just, we have a lot of listeners down there, guys. I don't know if you guys know this, but people call. They say that they live down there, Tampa, Fort Myers, Port Charlotte, all that area. We had a lot of Floridians who listen. So, you know, I know that the listening to WGR is not the thing they're worried about today, but, you know, we just... Obviously, we're thinking about everybody down there because this is a monster, and it's going to be pretty devastating.
Yeah, 10-foot storm surge, I think I saw, in the Tampa area.
Yeah.
And
Tampa is actually north now of where it's going. It's actually going directly pretty much where I used to live and where my parents used to live, and, you know, they're moving back to Buffalo, and, you know, they have friends down there. We're all watching it intently. Anyway, what you're talking about, though, the weather next week in Baltimore – it's going to be some of the remnants of this. It's going to be Ian. Ian's going to come through there, and it's going to go right up pretty much the southeast, and then you're going to get some weather from that. We'll talk with Patrick Hamer more about this on Friday, but the timing of it could obviously slow it down, and maybe it's not the case. But the rain and wind you're talking about on Sunday is pretty much going to be a little bit associated with this.
It's a curious time to have this happen with these two teams specifically, Sal, as we start to transition in the week from the Dolphins loss to looking ahead to the Ravens game. If it's raining and if it's a downpour, your mind immediately goes to, okay, that means more running, and you're not going to be able to throw the ball 63 times like Allen did last week, or the Ravens won't be able to do it as much as they're doing with Jackson, and suddenly two teams that have been asking their quarterbacks to put capes on and carry them are going to have to go to run games that have, for both teams, really been non-existent.
Agreed. I've thought a little bit about this, like, who does it benefit? I'm not really sure, because if you have to keep the ball on the ground, well, guess what? The best runner in the game plays for the Baltimore Ravens. His name is Lamar Jackson. You know, in this particular game, like any mistake, like if you're gonna run it more than throw it throughout the whole game with both teams, that could be a look what happened last year, where New England, they ran the ball so much, all they needed was that one run to make something happen, right? And that's what happened. At the same time, you know, maybe it benefits the Bills, because I think the Ravens have relied so much on their passing game, and they have thrown the ball down the field and been more of a vertical passing game than the Bills, that maybe that slows that down a little bit and takes away their ability to make the big play in the air, which they have made a lot of this year. So, I think you could go either way on it, I guess, the way you think about it right now.
Yeah, with the Bills, Sal, you know, they might be, as you're describing Baltimore there, it almost describes the Bills a bit too. If they can't push the ball down the field, the efficient passing game is still there, of course, but the run game, right? What is this, year two or year three of talking about the Bills' desires to run the ball more efficiently? And now with new offensive line coach Aaron Kromer, yes, they've got injuries on that line. Maybe the Miami game was a result of that. But do you get the sense that here we are, and they're talking in that building about we have to find a way to be better, more efficient running the football without Josh Allen being the one that carries it?
Sure. I think any time that, you know, you see what's gone on the last couple of weeks where they really haven't been able to lean on that run game as much as they wanted to at certain points in the game, I think that's the case. I think it's especially shown up in the short yardage situations, right? I mean, they're just not good in short yardage runs right now. They're not converting on third and shorts and fourth and shorts when they run the football. They've had several of those this year. So I definitely think that, Jeremy. I think that they feel they have to be more efficient. I feel they have to be more probably more powerful, at the point of attack. And, you know, it's something I was very excited about watching in preseason and camp. I thought they were great at it in preseason. They really did a nice job, but it is preseason. I still believe Aaron Kromer is a very good offensive line coach and very good for this. And one thing that I think could give Bills fans solace is, I'll go back to something that Eric Wood always talked about, which is Aaron Kromer is a problem solver. Like, having someone like that in your building is good for these situations where, okay, what's going on? What do we need to do? He's the kind of guy that can help solve that problem, at least to get you there. He's not just a position coach who knows technique. Like, he's a guy, he's been an offensive coordinator, an interim head coach, and he's very good at trying to figure out the X's and O's and the schematics of maybe trying to fix that. So I think having him in the building with Ken Dorsey and all the other coaches, I think, is a good thing here. So through 3 weeks, has not gone really the way they wanted to. I thought they ran the ball pretty efficiently against the Rams, but we'll see. I don't think it's panic time at all, but I do think it's something that they're probably addressing in the building, to answer your question, yes.
And last year, Sal, like, they were not in this by volume, but they were one of the more efficient rushing attacks in the league. A lot of that is Allen, but Singletary too, like, yards before contact, like, he was one of the top backs in football, and that's more an O-line stat than it is anything else. What, I guess, two-part, what is the explanation for so far? Is it injuries? Because they have had a rotating door through three games, it feels like. And two, I guess, what's the fix? Are we just waiting for Mitch Morse to get healthy? Are we waiting for other guys, Brown, to be able to stay on the field? Is it, is simply put, as they just need to get their healthy five back out there?
No, I don't know, Joe, because, I mean, other than Brown leaving last week, I don't think that they've really had any injuries to the starting five, right? I mean, Bates went out last week a little bit, but they've started each game and they've played the majority of the game with the starting five. It's the depth that's been tested more than anything. But, you know, I mean, you talk about I guess you're right. I'm sorry. I'm not even thinking about Morse because you mentioned Morse. Yeah, that was a tough one last week. Not having Mitch Morse definitely hurt them last week. So, you know, my bad. I forgot that, you know, he was out there. He was out last week, but you're right. That's part of it. I would say for sure, like, you think about losing your center. I think more than anything, it's just execution. It's just being better at what you're trying to do. You know, I don't know. I don't know if there's one thing. If you went to Sean McDermott or Aaron Cromer and said, like, what's been the issue? They'd probably run through a laundry list of things and say, look, we haven't done this as well. We haven't done this as well. Look, they also faced Aaron Donald week one, and they faced Jeffrey Simmons week two. Now, Miami didn't have that necessarily strong front, but then you go to Miami game, that's when the injuries started popping up. So maybe it's just been a confluence of all those little events. One thing that's been interesting to me, I've seen them run more toss sweeps than I've ever seen them run. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. Mm-hmm. I've never seen them run this many toss sweeps under Brian Daboll. And I'm wondering, like, if it's just something that they're not confident in running between the tackles as much. Maybe it's because of who they've played against, and maybe because Miami was blitzing or whatever too and against them. But it seems like they're trying to get to the edge a little bit more often on those toss sweeps. And, you know, I wonder if maybe something there, that going straight ahead, I guess, a little bit more often than going sideline to sideline on some of these plays.
We're also starting to see an uptick in James Cook, but only by a little bit. So I wonder if that might be something that happens throughout the season, of he gets a little bit more touches. Yeah. And that's not really fixing, I guess, you would think, the inside rushing game that we're talking about. He might be the guy you would think gets those toss sweeps later in the season. But we'll see
it's also the guy that I think that if you think about breaking a long run or having the athleticism or speed to – you know, get to the second level and then do damage, it would be James Cook. Although, of course, Zach Moss had that run last week, right? Which, was that even a toss sweep? It might have been.
It might have been,
yeah. So, I think James Cook probably has to factor in here at some point. Again, it's 3 weeks in. I don't think it's anything to necessarily panic about. You know, but I bet you, and I would imagine it's something being talked about, especially because of this week, because of what we're talking about with, you know, the rain and the possible rain and the possible wind. For the game against the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to look up right now, and I don't think the Ravens are great against the run. 26th in yards per play, almost giving up 5 yards a carry. They've given up 104 yards a game. That's 13th in the league, but they're giving up close to 5 yards a carry against the run. So, I mean, this is a game where maybe you can try to fix that a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeremy. I was going to switch to the defense into Xavier Rhodes. How quickly can they onboard Xavier Rhodes?
Very quickly, because he's used to Leslie Frazier's system, which is Sean McDermott's system, essentially. And as I've pointed out many times in years past about these kinds of signings, the reason you go get a guy who's been in the league a long time, he's gonna be in shape. Like, guys like that, they stay in shape. They're looking for a job. Seems like, you know, he wasn't a guy sitting around going, am I going to retire? It's more like, I'm looking for a job, right? So you go to a guy like that because you can bring him in. You know he's going to be in shape. He's going to take care of his body. So physically, he's going to be ready to roll. And then I think just from a schematic standpoint, he's been in these defenses. That's why you get him. He's familiar with Leslie Frazier. I think you could onboard him very quickly. Doesn't necessarily mean he'll play this week, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he did.
If he were to not play this week or to be limited, are they at Jamarcus Ingram as the next corner that could even be starting?
Oh, yeah. I think as of right now, though, Joe, like, to me, if you were to give me, like, who's starting, I'd probably put Jamarcus Ingram in there. You still have to see Xavier Rhodes out there, right? You still have to see him do it. He's still got to kind of take that job and show that he can be on board and go, yep, I remember all this stuff. I'm in shape. You go out and you get the guy like that, you're confident in that, but you still have to do it. Jamarcus Ingram came in and played fairly well, you know, and he is the guy up. So, no doubt. To me, it's right now, it's Kyrie Elam and Jamarcus Ingram, and then, hey, is Xavier Rhodes ready? I think maybe that's what you're looking at. So,
yeah,
a big test here. Jamarcus Ingram. I don't know if a lot of people know Jamarcus Ingram from the University of Buffalo. You know, they have Cam Lewis, obviously, from UB, Jamarcus Ingram from UB. So, yeah, I think Jamarcus Ingram is probably, to me right now, the second starting corner opposite Kyrie Elam.
Yeah.
But I would think that they would at least give a look at Xavier Rhodes and what he could do and, you know how much he can contribute in the first week.
One other housekeeping question about the secondary. I had a couple of people ask me, both on the show, Extra Point Show yesterday, and on Twitter, why no Cam Lewis at cornerback last week or as an option going forward? My best answer, and I don't know this to be right, but maybe you can clarify, my best answer was, I think he was their only other person that could play safety on Sunday.
It's a good answer. I would say that's part of it, but the other thing is he's just not a boundary corner. He can do it. It's not really what you have him on the field for. He's also the only. His main position is to be a slot corner, backup slot corner to Taron Johnson, and he can play a little safety. So more than anything, he's a middle of the field guy. He's a slot corner. He's a safety. He's not really a boundary corner.
Okay.
I think when you have those options, you'd rather go with the options you have. You know, if you have Jamarcus Ingram, you already elevated him. Somebody goes down. That's a boundary corner. That's what he does. So you put him in there. It's a good question, though. Maybe it could very well be this week they work him in there, right? I mean, maybe you have a whole week of thinking, okay, we're without Christian Benford. Let's get him some more reps over there. Same thing with Saran Neal. I was asked a lot about Saran Neal. Why is he not playing safety? Why is he not playing outside corner? Well, Saran Neal's really more of a box slot guy, box safety, big nickel, I guess you'd say. I mean, that's really his role. Plus, he plays so many special teams, and it's super hot, and you're trying to keep as much wear and tear off everybody as you can in the heat with rotation, so you got to have. And then they were losing special teams guys. I'm sure that was part of it with Cam Lewis as well, by the way. Cam Lewis, Saran Neal, think about the guys as they're going down. You know, these guys are playing special teams as well. You're trying to keep everybody as fresh as possible. I think there was just a lot of things that went into last week's game. But now you reset. You say, okay, let's reevaluate the roster. Can we put Cam Lewis on the outside? Can we put Saran Neal in there? It would not surprise me, Joe, if in Baltimore, maybe those things happen a little bit more because you've kind of had a chance to reset the roster and figure out what you want to do with everybody and where they belong.
All right, Sal. We'll wrap with the devilish question that Jeremy posed me at the end of the first hour. Let's say, hypothetically speaking, that the Bucks and Chiefs got moved instead of to Minnesota to Buffalo on Sunday night. Who would you be rooting for?
The Buccaneers. The Chiefs losing to an NFC team is, like, yeah, I mean, the Buccaneers winning would be emotionally maybe a bit bad for some people, but how could any Bills fan not want the AFC team to lose to the NFC team?
Might be one of those things where you walk into the stadium thinking you're going to root for the Buccaneers, and then you see Brady, and you just go, okay, I can't do this.
No, so the question isn't who. The question isn't if you're rooting for the Bucs or Chiefs. The question is, can you root for Tom Brady?
Right, and my answer to that is no, unfortunately.
Under any circumstances ever.
I mean,
the good news is, Sal, like, on the one seed conversation, the Bills are already up again. Or no, so the Chiefs are 2-1 also, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's an AFC against NFC game. Come on, man.
I couldn't do it. I could not do it.
I appreciate it. I appreciate
it.
Just can't do it.
I could not possibly
do
it. Nope. I couldn't do it. Maybe I'll just stay home.
What about could you root for the Bucks to win a low scoring game where Brady does nothing well?
You know what? Okay, yes.
Well, that's kind of what they are now.
Yeah, that's right. That is
right.
Yeah. You promised me he's going to throw three picks and yeah, okay. All right. Okay.
He'll get no credit for the win. It's all about Tampa's defense.
Okay, I can get on board with that.
Okay. Have we ever had to root for him for any reason? Have we ever had to root for Brady where like, oh, they need the Dolphins to lose?
No, not really, right? Like,
I don't think so.
The Bills were never in a position for the wild card in the final game of the year.
Yeah, okay, right.
The entire drought, so, yeah.
No, that's right. All right, thanks, Sal. We'll talk, of course, coming up at 10 a.m. We've got a Baltimore guest. We've got a referee guest, too, right?
Yeah, so I'll be down at the stadium. We have Sean McDermott at noon, so I'll be down there with you, Joe, from 10 to 12. You'll be there where you are. But, yeah, so coming up, we have Bo Smolka. He covers the Baltimore Ravens. He'll join us. And John Perry, who is the Monday Night Football analyst, who is a former referee. He's going to talk about, we're going to ask him about the Josh Allen spike play, if you will, or non-spike play at the first end of the first half, about Isaiah McKenzie saying he couldn't run out of bounds backwards to stop the clock, but maybe that's not true or incorrect how the process works at the end of the game. We'll ask him about the Tua situation from a referee standpoint. So there's a lot we can get to just from last week alone.
Beautiful.
One more thing, Sal. The Christian Wilkins dust-up with Allen. You mentioned with us yesterday that Eric Wood has said that's the fastest way to lose respect in the league, right? Because what Wilkins did to Allen, grabbing him there. And Allen on Kyle Brandt's podcast still kind of played it calmly, said, I've got to be better in that spot. I can't let my emotions get the better of me. And I guess I just wonder why players, if that is such a thing, which of course it should be, that'll make you lose respect, why won't they call the guy out directly, publicly, aggressively for that kind of behavior?
That's a better question for Eric Wood. My guess would be they don't want to become the story for this.
Sure.
I'm sure it's been talked about. I'm sure it's been talked about in the locker room.
Maybe a
amongst
little bit
the
of
players,
frontier,
coaches.
A little bit of frontier justice, like he'll get his out there from
yes,
opponents. Yes,
100%. Exactly. Okay. And Josh Allen wants to be a leader and let his guys serve it and focus on the next game. And if that starts happening, it becomes, oh, they're worried about what happened in Miami. He's worried about, oh, he's crying about it. Like, you know the way it goes, right? You're going to get that. And I think the Bills are all about, let's not let any of those things happen. Let's make sure we go forward. But I could pretty much guarantee you, without being there and knowing for sure, I just know how it works. Those things are being talked about in the locker room.
Right. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where someone,
and they play him again.
Right. And someone might ask, what about a suspension or a fine? And the reality is that seeing that in those piles is probably pretty difficult to confirm claims of that action.
Right. And the Melvin Ingram kick as well.
Yep.
That's on video.
That one seems easy to prove.
Yep, that's right. And I would think that that's going to be something they all remember and know about when they play the Miami Dolphins the next time around. But in the meantime, they're going to think about the Baltimore Ravens and kind of push that aside and not have it a part of their story this week.
All right, thanks, Sal. I'll talk to you coming up at 10 o'clock in the Extra Point Show.
Okay, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. When we come back, we did this a little bit yesterday. Are the Bills using Josh Allen too much? Let's even get some calls on this. 803-0550 is the phone number. Are you worried about the Bills using Josh Allen too much? Let us know what you think. Better to forget it coming up at 8:30. Joe Marino before that, of course, Locked On Bills and the Draft Network coming up at 8 o'clock. Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, welcome back. Jeremy White, Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Does your brain have hockey in it at all right now?
A little bit.
I've got a fantasy hockey league that's firing up right now. I've got to decide keepers by Monday.
Let me ask you about that. Regular question.
Yeah.
Is it the norm? You know, we talk about fantasy football all the time.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday with Howard, we talked about you're in 10 leagues.
Yeah.
I'm in 6.
Yep.
And I like to point out kind of in a funny way that 6 is below average. I'm in 6 fantasy football leagues.
Yep.
Is it normal or weird that the idea of any other fantasy league is off the table to me? What percentage of fantasy football players, you're in fantasy football, what
Ooh.
Percentage of them also do fantasy baseball, hockey, basketball, anything like that?
It's probably a really high percentage, isn't it? I think baseball's got to be the most popular of those. Isn't fantasy baseball like the first fantasy, I think?
Fantasy football's got to dominate.
Oh, for
number
sure.
Number one of them all.
Oh, but by
and
far
think,
now.
But you think baseball is something that... Football's the gateway, and I guess I'm asking, how often do people gateway to the other sports?
I want to guess like 70% are in a fantasy league with another
wow.
sport. Is that too high?
I think it's way too high.
70%? I'll put a poll up. But fantasy baseball is going to be a lot of that. And then around here especially, you know, I'm in 10, maybe I'm a good sample for this, 10 fantasy football leagues, 1 fantasy hockey league. That ratio might... point go to your point almost
yeah.
if it's 10-1, but I'm in a fantasy golf league too. That is definitely not popular. And then basketball too. I don't know. Shope, I know, is in a couple of these. He's actually in a couple of these with me. I want to think it's a high percentage. I'm sure you've been in one
yes,
of these before.
I have. I've been in fantasy baseball, basketball, and hockey, and we started a fantasy F1 circuit this
yes.
year.
Yes. Did that actually take hold?
Presumably the people in it are still paying attention to it.
You're
me,
not?
Not so much. You know.
Do you
it's
need
fantasy football or nothing else for me.
It's got to be like a guillotine format to get you in for fantasy F1?
Yes. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't think I could get there on F1. But hockey, I'm always into fantasy hockey every year when it comes around. But normally what happens is the first 2 weeks go by, and then I kind of lose interest. I'll still keep track of my roster and everything, but I'll lose interest. And then football goes by. It just consumes everything. And then maybe a week or two after football ends is when I really get into fantasy hockey.
Hmm. All right.
But I've
What's
gotta,
the fantasy hockey question?
I've got to decide between like Sam Bennett and Matt Boldy by Monday, and like my brain is not ready to compute that. Compute who I keep between Matt Boldy of the Minnesota Wild and Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers. Just like I've got should I start Noah Brown on Monday night against the New York Giants, taking up too much CPU up there. So,
well,
that's my decision.
You know how Bulldogs used to sound when you guys would talk fantasy football?
Yeah.
That's how I will sound about Sam Bennett and Matthew Boldy.
Okay.
Like, I just
good. This means Joe's fantasy hockey updates will be coming to the show in regular form.
Excellent.
I have 2 Sabres, so we can always make it a Sabres thing. Tage Thompson and Alex Tucker on this team.
Okay.
Although I guess I could not keep Tuck. Again, we don't need to get into this right now.
Are you on the Sabres on a regular
sure.
Sabres note? They played last night. They played 2 preseason games now. The season starts in a couple of weeks, which is exciting. Are you bullish on them? Are you pounding the table,
yeah.
bet the over, which is 77.5? It's going to be a good year. It's going to be a step forward. Like what's your general, preseason vibe for them?
I feel like I'm trying hard not to be bullish.
Okay.
Because it feels like you predict them to go 86, 87, 88 points, and you're drinking the Kool-Aid too much, or you're just so desperate to see a competitive team in any sort of race that because it's new players, given, the team 2 years ago looked completely different, and it's young guys, and it's filled with players that haven't let you down yet, I still... There's a belief in me that it's going to work. And I think that has me feeling optimistic for the start of the season. But there is always this thing tugging at me that, hey, they're over-under is 77.5. And hey, Ottawa and Detroit made moves in the offseason that make them better, or at least you know, reason to believe they're better than you right now.
They're certainly trying to be better than you right away.
They're at least trying to, exactly. And the conference is still, Boston brought everybody back after thinking they might lose guys. Pittsburgh brought everybody back after thinking they might lose guys. I've got all of these things around the Sabres and within them too that are pulling me back to, you gotta see it first. Because this happened to me with the Bills drought, where, and I'm a kid then, so it's a little bit different, but whenever there was a new coach, whenever there was a new quarterback, whenever there was a new receiver, anything that could get me hopeful, I'd get hopeful. And they let you down time after time after time. And eventually I got to the point with the Bills where it was, I'm just not going to believe anything until I see it happen.
Right.
And I feel like I'm not there yet with the Sabres. I probably should be, but it's new. It's new. The coach is still likable, and there's a belief in me that it's going to work. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's like almost trying not to be over-the-top bullish on them is where I'm at.
Yeah, I guess where I am, I'm not pessimistic. It's funny, though, Joe, if you say I'm not optimistic, that sounds like you have to be pessimistic. Like there's nowhere in the middle, right? And it's a little bit of what you said, like I have to see it. What I have to see is I have to see 2 to 3 players become undisputably great. Great. Not just nice, good, but great. And that is, for me, like the idea of them being a good team includes having great players.
Right.
So Dahlin's step forward was encouraging. I'm most interested in if he looks like he is ready to make the step to great this year. And Owen Power, of course. Thompson had a really nice season. If he follows up and does it again, okay, now we can start to have a conversation about whether or not he can be a great player for them.
Yeah.
But when you start to get to Cousins and Krebs and what they'll become, like I've got a scrap heap of players that thought that they were going to become great and just turned into guys in the league. And that's not to say that I don't believe in them. It's just that everybody, and I mean this, everybody feels good about their young players.
Yeah.
The Sabres have a lot more of them than most franchises, and their prospect pool is very, very rich. So I like the idea that they have as many, you want to call them scratch-off tickets as you want, they have as many of these opportunities to have a great player breakthrough as any team in the league. But, you know, they brought almost everybody back. There's no market improvement, maybe other than in goal, and the same players getting a little better, which, you know, that can be a big boost. There seems to be a cap on how good they could be unless I get 2 to 3 guys really turning into something special.
Well, the goalie point's worth mentioning there, too, because that's part of it for me, too. It's like, oh, well, they should be better in net, but, like, I'm resting my hopes on a guy that played 19 games last season and has played 28 in his career. Like, that's where my goalie improvement's coming. It's a guy that's played less than 30 games in the league in 6 years. So, the star point, though, how many guys right now would you project are going to be top 20 players in the league, 25, 30 players in the league? Like, Dahlin, maybe, Power, maybe. But there's no one on the team right now that has done that.
No.
And I've got, like, what's the copycat team right now? It's Colorado. And they've got 2 top 5 players in the league, maybe. I still want to believe that star power and elite talent is going to rue the day for the great teams. And what I've got with the Sabres right now is I've got talent in volume. It's I can read off a list of prospects that'll take me 45 seconds to run through because there's so many names. And it's a stark difference from 5 years ago when I'd say, okay, Brendan Gooley. And it's like end of list. Like that's the guy that we're waiting to see if he's good. Now I've got like 20 guys, 25 guys to see if they're good. But over the years, what happens if half those guys flame out, which is maybe even being generous for the success rate on prospects, only half of those guys hit, and they're all, you know, they're pretty good. Like, don't I need Quinn or Savoy or Paterka? I need one of these guys to just be, like, stun us all?
You need all-stars. I mean, I don't even have to have you be the top 5, top 10, but legitimate all-stars on your team. You know, like that's just
– yeah.
That's the last time the Sabres had a truly great team, they had what, 4? Miller,
Miller,
Briere, Campbell.
You wouldn't put Drury on that list?
Sure. I don't think he made the All-Star game. Like,
Yeah. You know. That's right. Lindy's the fourth I'm thinking of.
Maybe, yeah.
He's the coach.
So we'll see. The success for the Sabres this year, they did a lot of great work last year getting the fans back. And I would say keep doing that. And if you can continue to build that through an entertaining style of play and enough victories and results and, you know, very few nights where people are turned off, then that's, to me, a success. And that probably happens. 77 points, I don't know about that. We'll see. If they're exciting, then that's one thing. But you get to 86 to 90, that's probably not making the playoffs, but that's going to get people, I think, back because, you know, it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad. So
it was rock bottom. I mean,
it was rock bottom.
They were playing. There's no more depressing sight. There's nowhere to go down from playing, and COVID is a big reason for this, but playing in front of no fans, and I've got Eric Staal on the ice in a Sabres uniform to like at 40 years old.
Just, he represents rock bottom to you?
To me, like, that's the low point of the franchise, is when they were playing in front of no fans, and like, we were nearing the end with Eichel. Maybe we didn't know it yet at the time, but, and I've got like the last gasp, right? Like, we traded for Eric Staal and what else? The signed Taylor Hall. It's like, this is it. We're going for it at the end. And that was their idea of going for it. Like, to me, that's rock bottom.
Yeah.
It never got worse for me than that point. And now they're on the way back up. Sabres and Blue Jackets tonight. That's a 7 o'clock puck drop. Paul will join Chopin the Bulldog at 6 o'clock. No official pregame, but they'll talk some hockey a little bit later on as well.
One thing the hockey does really well is get you from Bills game to Bills game.
Yeah.
You know, like, waiting for this Baltimore game, I could, instead of thinking about the Bills game nonstop, which I'll probably do most of the week, or try to get to this Miami game tonight, or tomorrow night, Miami and Cincinnati. Throw me a Sabres game here or there. It's a nice distraction before you get fully into the meat of the season.
I already looked up what the Thursday night football game is the night of the Sabres home opener against Ottawa. Do you know it?
No.
Washington at Chicago.
Oh, I can skip it.
Perfect.
Sounds great.
Perfect Thursday night game to skip. Chicago Bears and Washington Commanders. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you're on hold, stay there. We will get to a conversation about Allen and usage. Jackson, too, because the Bills play the Ravens this week, and I'm sure Baltimore's talking about that with him at least a little bit. ESPN talks about it with him all the time, so he's a part of this conversation as well. Jody Biasi, Jeremy White, Joe Marino from Locked On Bills and the Draft Network coming up in just over 10 minutes here on WGR.
They're excellent defensive coach. 6 years, they still haven't developed a run game. Sean McDermott developed a defensive line that's great, linebackers great, secondary that's great. He has leaned into and solved his side of the ball. And here's why it worries me. 6 years in, they still rely heavily on Josh Allen to pick up yards running the ball. Sort of like another defensive coach, Ron Rivera, did with Cam. And often Mike Tomlin did with Big Ben. Defensive coaches let those huge quarterbacks pick up yards, kind of run things. It doesn't last. It's why Cam fell over a cliff at 32, like literally aged overnight.
How does that sound to you?
It sounds like I want to say, well, at least Carolina runs the ball well now. Right? Like,
yes.
I mean, I think there's sometimes there's a lot of special selection of, you know, you're making a recipe to try and come away with a dish and serve it.
Yeah.
The Bills were good at running the ball last year.
Yes.
They have not called a lot of designed runs. One of the issues here, if anybody wants to get after it, I tweeted this at Nate, Joe, when, you know, talking about how often how Allen is used too much, tell him to stop running.
Yeah, scrambles.
That solves your problem about him being your leading ball carrier. Does anybody want to do that? How many designed runs did he get called for on 93 plays in Miami? How many designed runs? One?
It might have been zero.
He had the one play on the goal line.
Oh, the goal line one. That's right. So, yeah, that would be it. That would be it.
It's not like they're running QB power. And, again, the last time they ran that a lot in a game was when they went to Kansas City on the road and won.
Yeah.
And was anybody mad? They're not calling his number. He's scrambling. He's deciding to take off. They don't have an answer, there's almost a little bit of an element of they don't have some answers. They're missing some answers in the passing game, and then it becomes the Josh Allen scramble game, which has been working for the Bills. Does anybody want to say that has to stop?
I don't. I'm not sure there's nothing to the Cam comparison about body breaking down over time.
And maybe not getting calls because he's a big, strong quarterback.
Yep.
He's seeking contact, so maybe he's less likely to get a call. I think that's fair.
But I'm also not worried about it the way I would have been with Cam, because Allen is leaps and bounds a better passer than Newton ever was. So, like, he brings up Roethlisberger there, and I think he has no need to include Roethlisberger, because even at his best, Roethlisberger's not taking off and jumping over people.
No, Roethlisberger's athleticism was good for the time.
Yeah. But like, he, over time, when he got immobile into his 30s, he was pocket passer, and he was good. And for a time, he could still throw the ball down the field until the last couple of years. And I don't have a concern about Allen. If his body gets to a point where he can't be jumping over people and he can't be running the way he runs right now, I'm still going to have confidence he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in football. And Cam Newton that was never going to happen with Cam Newton. The moment he couldn't win by running, he wasn't going to be a franchise quarterback, because he had maybe 1 year where he was above average in passing efficiency. So I'm not against, or I'm not saying it's wrong to compare the two about the tread on the tires and running that style, that type of body physically, and your body can break down. But I think Allen's passing floor right now makes it different. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills, the Draft Network, on the way next. Joe DiBiase, Jeremy White here in WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.